This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, April 8th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, a special anniversary in baseball history today. You know what that is, right?
I do. Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. Baseball knowledge, man. There we go.
Would you have known it if I hadn't put in the rundown this morning?
No, I would not have. No, not at all.
Well, it is a special day. I have special memories. We're going to be getting to that in a second. We're actually going to hear Vin Scully's call of the Henry Aaron home run from April 8th, 1974. But before we get to that, before we talk to Sarah Langs, before we talk to Stefania Bell about the Fernando Tatis Jr. injury, let's get to some news and notes of the day. Blue Jays outfielder George Springer is now dealing with a quad issue. He was feeling tightness in his right quad while running the bases on Thursday. So it's unclear exactly how this is going to affect when George Springer is going to be back in the Blue Jays lineup. New York Yankee slugger Aaron Judge was ruled out of the lineup on Wednesday because soreness in his left side. I'm going to be asking Stefania about him and about whether or not this is just going to be part of the deal with Aaron Judge as we move forward. Chicago White Sox play shortstop Tim Anderson on the 10-day injured list with a hamstring injury that occurred on Sunday as he was running to first base. After opening the season on the injured list due to a shoulder problem, Athletics closer Trevor Rosenthal may now require surgery. He is out indefinitely. Congratulations to Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins. He got a 5-year extension. Of course, runs through now the 2026 season. Some great stuff from the Wednesday games. The Braves came back to win game one of a doubleheader against the Washington Nationals. And in game two, top of the seventh inning, this is what happened.
3-2 pitch. Swung on and hit well out towards center field. Going back towards the wall is Victor Robles. This ball is gone. Pablo does it again. Blast off for the Braves here in the seventh inning in a 2-0 lead.
Pablo Sandoval, that call from 680, the fan, he already is one of the best pinch hitters in all of baseball because there's never been any question about his ability to put the bat on the ball. And Taylor, what I loved about that is the sound in the background. I was actually watching the Nationals television broadcast when this happened. Man, the field mic picked up one of his teammates. Can you play that again? Listen for his teammate, and I don't know who it was, going nuts in the background when he hit the ball.
3-2 pitch. Swung on and hit well out towards center field. Going back towards the wall is Victor Robles. This ball is gone.
Yeah, you got to love that sound, right? I think that's a little bit the way you sounded at the end of the Orioles game.
Oh, yeah. Hopping all around my basement, screaming Tony Taters with the grab and the toss to home plate. I mean, that was very exciting. Not quite that much.
That now, since we've led into that, you want to just go with that one?
Yeah, let's do it.
The 1-2. Lined into right. Santander comes up firing. Here's the throw. It's there, and he got him.
Game over.
A walk-off win. Anthony Santander cuts down Urshela at the plate, and the Orioles end the New York Yankee 12-game losing streak.
That's right, a double play to end the Orioles' victory. Oakland tied the game against the Dodgers in the bottom of the ninth against Kenley Jansen. In the bottom of the 10th, this is what happened.
Nelson's 17th pitch. And it's swung on, lifted to center field. That's by Taylor. And the A's have cashed in their first win of 2021. Mitch Moreland with a clean single to right center. He scores Marcana. The A's come all the way back. They beat the Dodgers 4-3. And finally, elation, handshakes, and smiles for the Athletics as they get their first victory of 2021.
That from A's cast. Yep, Oakland will not be shut out of victories in 2021. Brewers and Cubs, what a day for Lorenzo Cain.
Workman's pitch, and Cain drives this one out to center field. Back on its hap, at the track, it is gone! Lorenzo Cain with a 3-run blast, his second homer of the game.
That from 620 WTMJ. And the Indians and Royals. And yesterday, Jose Ramirez was a one-man band for Cleveland.
Runner goes, pitch is swung in and ripped. Deep right field. Goal!
the 9-foot wall and right. It's Jose Ramirez, 4, and Kansas City, 2.
That was the second two-run homer of the day from Jose Ramirez. He accounted for all of the Indians' runs in their 4-2 win. That call from Tom Hamilton on WATAM 1100. Now, before we get to Boog, Sarah, and Stefania, and to that call from Vin Scully, we're celebrating the third birthday of ESPN Plus. That's right. It's been 3 years of bringing you three-pointers, hat tricks, 30 for 30s, and so much more. Celebrate with us today by streaming your favorite live sports, originals, and documentaries on ESPN Plus. Thanks for joining us the past 3 years. And if you don't have ESPN Plus yet, it's not too late to join the party. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Also, listen to and watch my friend Greeny. He's on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. And you can follow Greeny wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck.
The legend.
On its way. Out of here.
Boog Giambi on Baseball Tonight.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Giambi, the legend. It's great to see you. First off, it's great to see you, but how about the drop that Taylor Schwenk updated for you?
I like it. I'm still mortified by it, but it's also it's a good joke for the two of us to giggle to.
All right. How's the new gig going?
It's been so much fun. You and I are baseball dorks and we have a great passion for baseball. And anytime we're in a place that mirrors our passion for baseball, we're even more energized. Like you and I are the same that way. It's what we connect on. And this place is one of those places. They just care. So it's been fun. I'm working with a guy on the air in Jim DeShays, who's wonderful. He's, you know, smart and curious and funny. We've done some games with Ryan Dempster, who I've known since he was 21 years old. And I think is, an up and coming star. And then in terms of being at Wrigley Field, you know, 6 straight days to begin the year has been really special. And then the other part I would add is, and to do it with fans in the ballpark is pretty amazing.
I mentioned this to Taylor McGregor when I had her on the podcast in spring training. You know, she obviously moving over to the Cubs after covering the Rockies for a lot of years. I did this during my career. When you go from something that you've known and been around for a while and go to something new, it's a little scary, but that scary is kind of fun. Yes?
Absolutely. No, there's no, I'm the new guy. I had, like my car broke down the other day as I was going into the parking lot, and it was terrible. It was I don't know why I'm sharing this, but it was like, and I was the new kid, and I was like, but I have to get inside and go broadcast the game. And they were like, yeah, but what are we doing with your car? And I was like, I don't know. Okay. If we tow it, where should we tow it? I don't know. What can you get the car to move it? I've had it for 6 days. I don't know. Like, you know, I was the new guy. I had no clue, and I was frazzled, and yet, there's scary parts to it, but to me, it's invigorating and exciting. Absolutely.
All right. What have the first days of this season revealed about the Chicago Cubs?
I don't think it's been overly surprising. You know, they, by and large, catch the ball really well at an above average rate. They won the team gold glove last year. Not that that's the end all be all, but it's, there are good defenders on the field. I think the starting pitching will be pretty good. The bullpen has gotten swings and misses. You know, the offense is off to a really rough start. It's pretty amazing that a team to begin the year in six games has, I believe, 21 hits and they're 3-3. I mean, think about that. They're 3-3. Wow. They have 21 hits. And I believe it's the fewest hits through six games in the modern era for the Cubs. So it's pretty incredible what we've seen. There's a lot of swing and miss. I think it'll, bounce back the other way. It's a team, when they're right, they're going to walk, they're going to hit homers, and they're going to strike out. But it's been a bit of a rough go offensively.
For a team that relies on home runs, I've been talking about this week how I wonder if the context is changing. You know, when I did the Sunday night game out in Anaheim, White Sox and Angels, there were swings, there were balls hit in the air that in recent years you were conditioned to, okay, that ball's 20 feet out. But that wasn't happening. And I feel like when I'm watching games, there's a mush ball. I don't know if you got a chance to see the end of the Indians and Royals game yesterday, but Michael Taylor hit a breaking ball with two outs in the ninth inning. It was a hanger. He absolutely killed it. And you could see from his reaction, from the reaction of Nick Whitgren, the Indians closer on the mound, everybody thought the ball was going to go way out, and it died at the warning track. I'm calling it the mush ball. Are you seeing signs of that?
So the thing that's been interesting, though, is that I'm still not entirely certain what they're doing as far as, are all of the baseballs in 2021 of that consistency? Because I had heard some rumors that in spring training they were kind of mixing them in. And so I've seen, like Jason Hayward hit a home run this year. He's already hit a ball with exit velocity harder than he hit a ball all of last year. And he hit one. So he's, we've seen a couple of 450-foot homers already. Jock Peterson hit one a mile. And I've also had some balls that off the bat I thought were gone, and I've been surprised and a little bit confused. So, yeah, I've seen the splat ball, and I'm curious to see what ends up happening. I will tell you this. This is only going to work if, in my opinion, if at a certain point the pitchers gather, okay, I can do it, and stop going for swing and miss. Because the way they're interlocked is pitchers are going for swing and miss in part because they're afraid of the home run ball. So, and with trying to expand the zone, it means more strikeouts, but it also means more walks. So you need to have the collateral effect of the ball's not going out. Okay, you know what? I'm going to try and get some outs on balls in play as opposed to purposefully trying to miss bats all the time. That's my take on it. That's what has to happen for this to work. So the pace of the game can move along a little bit more.
Yeah, and that is a really interesting point, which you actually brought up to me in the middle of that horrendous Braves-Dodgers game, playoff game last year, when the Dodgers scored, 12 runs in the first inning?
Yep.
Yeah, and then, of course, the rest of the game, we're just trying to think of things to talk about. And I just mentioned that at some point, during the course of that game that, you know what, maybe both teams will be devoted to the idea. Let's move this game along. Let's get this over with as quickly as possible. You start seeing pitchers pound the strike zone, get the ball in play, and then everyone goes home. And you correctly pointed out, no, that's not how pitchers think anymore when relievers come into games.
Yeah. It's not the way, it isn't the way they think. They're not. And then, I mean, it's all a trickle down. It's not the way the pitchers think. It's not the way the hitters think. Like, I remember we were in London, you know, when those Red Sox Yankees games were ugly, man. And from an offensive standpoint, but you know, one team's leading by, I think the Yanks were leading by, you know, 7-8 runs, and like Brett Gardner's up there in the eighth inning and he's taking a pitch 2 inches off the outside edge of the plate that gets called a strike and he's turning around and barking. There's just, and then the umpires as well, you get into a game back in the old days, if there's a bang bang play at first, like, we're not reviewing it. The guy, you're out, because let's move it along. Well, now they're being evaluated on every single play, every single pitch. So that's one of the areas where, with all the data, the information, evaluation, analytics, it slows things down.
So, Boog, yesterday when we heard from A.J. Preller about Fernando Tatis Jr., where he painted a very glass half full picture of what was going on, it reminded me of my longtime mantra of being a reporter that teams are not obligated to tell us all of the medical information. And on the flip side of that, me as a reporter or any fan, we're not obligated to believe what they tell us. And yeah, when I saw the explanation for it, I was like, nope, I don't believe it. I think there's a lot more to the story than you. What's your sense of that?
I think those are fair points. I think that the one I know that the average person, you know, doesn't have a love affair with the media. The one point that I just like to be active in pointing out is this. No, they don't have a responsibility to tell us. But I'd also say this. That in, I'm going macro, in broader situations, when you decide you don't want to talk, and when you minimize it, if we're going to speculate, like, that's on you a little bit, because it, you know, we're giving you a chance to tell your side. We're looking for information or a response and giving you the opportunity. So like that, so you can't, you know, like if we end up getting it wrong, I mean, not purposefully, but if we end up getting it wrong and you're holding out, you lose the right to complain a little bit that our information isn't bad while you're sitting there withholding the information. You understand my point? Like, so.
Oh, I totally understand it. If a general manager lies about something and that is borne out by events subsequently, then they lose all credibility moving forward and everything they say can be put into question, which right. is why it's important to tell the correct information.
Yes. Yeah, I'm in on that. So, look, you know what's the one thing I'll tell you is doing, you know, the national games for so long, and I don't think this part is going to change. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. No. I'm filled with sadness when, I mean, not to be overly dramatic, but I'm doing Cubs Pirates. I'm the Cubs broadcaster. I don't want to see Key Brian Hayes get hurt, though, man. That's an exciting, interesting, good young player. I want him on the field. The game is better. Everything is better when he's on the field. So, you know, it doesn't change the fact that when I'm doing the Cubs games, I like Cubs to win. More fun that way. But I'm saying, like, I want Key Brian Hayes on the field. I don't want to see somebody get hurt. So, and a talent at the level of Tatis, yeah, you want to see him on the field.
No, baseball is better if he's healthy and he's producing and he's giving us all the highlights like he gave us last year. All right. As you know, this is a special anniversary in baseball history. Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's record April 8th, 1974 with a 715th home run. In just a couple minutes, we're going to play Vin Scully's call of number 715. And I was thinking about this as I was getting ready for you today, that this might be the most memorable call in baseball history. And I'm not saying it's the best call per se. I'm not saying it's the most dramatic moment in baseball history, like the David Freese, you know, home run in the 2011 World Series, but yeah, maybe the most memorable call. And within that standard, I thought of, you know what, the ball going through Buckner's legs, 1986, that would be in this conversation. Here's another one that I think at one point was in the conversation. This is from 1951. Russ Hodges, give a listen.
Not taking any chances. Watson without too big of a lead at second, but he'll be running like the wind if Thompson hits one. Francis throws. There's a long shot.
That was Russ Hodges with the call of Bobby Thompson, three-run homer, as the Giants win the pennant, as he told you in 1951 at the end of that playoff with the Dodgers. I think for years, and I think you would agree with me on this, that was the most memorable call in baseball history. But I don't know if it is anymore, because if I walk up to, you know, 10 fans in the stands at Wrigley Field, I bet you seven of them may not have ever heard of that moment.
Yeah, there's, I mean, an age factor. I think that I would still probably vote that as the most famous call. I think there are a couple of others. I mean, I didn't have a dog in the fight, but, you know, the Scully call of the Buckner ground ball, I wish I could tell you why, but it's on TV. And it's a really cool call because, and I remember every line of it. It's little roller up along first, and then it goes through his legs, and Vin's a little behind the call. So the way his voice goes up, it goes through his legs. So it goes this way, little roller up along first, behind the bag. And now it's through his legs. And he says, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight and the Mets win it. So, like, there's a way that he does it that's just, yeah, it's really good. I would also say this, that on the Gibson home run, the mirror calls, I mean, I have goosebumps right now just thinking about the mirror. Jack Buck's home run call, I've always maintained this. I don't believe what I just saw. The best part of that home run call, any radio producers, listen up. When you play that call, you have to get the second, I don't believe what I just saw. He says, I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw. That's the best part of it. And to do that on the fly, if you gave me 2,000 chances at that one, I would never come up with a call that good. And then Vin's on TV, and he unleashes the line, in a year that's been so improbable, the impossible has happened. So, like, those two calls on that one play by two of the greatest broadcasters ever. I do think that the Russ Hodges call, it's pure joy. And it's, you know, it's a little bit like a fan is in the booth and it's wonderful. I would still say it is for me the most memorable, but there's something to the Buckner call with Scully is almost like a song. The way little roller up along first behind the bag. And yeah, so anyway.
See, you know what's really cool about this, Boog, is that I gave you zero preparation with this. I didn't give you any heads up. No. I was a rotten teammate. I didn't shoot you an email yesterday, and yet you came up with the absolute gold, which is why you're the legend. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, man. Thanks, pal.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Here's Vin Scully's call of Henry Aaron's home run number 715, April 8th, 1974.
Once again, a standing ovation for Henry Aaron. So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. So we'll see what Downing does. Al at the belt delivers, and he's low, ball one. And that just adds to the pressure. the crowd booing. Downing has to ignore the sound effects and stay a professional and pitch his game. One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth. As Aaron circled the bases, the Dodgers on the infield shook his hand, and that was a memorable moment. Aaron is being mobbed by photographers. He is holding his right hand high in the air, and for the first time in a long time, that poker face of Aaron shows the tremendous strain and relief of what it must have been like to live with for the past several months. It is over. At 10 minutes after 9 in Atlanta, Georgia, Henry Aaron has eclipsed the mark set by Babe Ruth. You could not, I guess, get two more opposite men. The Babe, big and garrulous and oh so sociable and oh so immense in all of his appetites. And then the quiet lad out of Mobile, Alabama, slender and stayed slender throughout his career. Ruth, as he put on the poundage and the paunch, the Yankees put their ball players in pinstripe uniforms because it made Ruth look slimmer. But they didn't need pinstripe uniforms for Henry Aaron in the twilight of his career. He looks almost the same as he did when he first came up 20 years ago. And so it was a memorable moment before the game, and now what a sweet moment it is here in the middle of the game. So Henry and the Babe, the two greatest home run hitters that have ever lived. And it's a marvelous, wonderful, enjoyable moment here in Atlanta. We're so happy, too, that it could be seen all over the United States, that it will be duly reported all around the world. And I'm sure films of it will be seen around the world, and you can hear Georgia around the world. Henry Aaron is now at the microphone. Henry, sum it all up by saying, I thank God it's all over with. And I'm sure he has thanked God many times that he had to do it to get it all over with, as he becomes the greatest home run hitter in the history of baseball.
You know, Stefania Bell, she's ESPN's injury expert. Stefania, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Buster?
I'm doing great. I, like you, concerned about Fernando Tatis Jr. And yesterday, after we heard from A.J. Preller, the general manager of the Padres, who basically gave a glass half full view of what Tatis Jr. is dealing with, it reminded me of my old reporter mantra, that I feel like, okay, teams are not obligated to tell us everything they know about every injury. And we as reporters and as fans are not obligated to believe what they tell us. Because when I heard AJ's explanation the other day, I was like, I think there's more than that. And in fact, I was immediately getting text messages from folks with other teams saying that potentially is more complicated than what they're laying out. You know this far better than I do. But what was your reaction and what's your feeling on what we have here?
I think you summed it up pretty well. And I think what's funny is while you were getting texts from other teams, and I'm not sure exactly who you're talking to, but I was talking to baseball medicine people from around the league and people both within and outside the league and getting the exact same reaction. So, you know, I think that what we understand in baseball is that there is there are these types of injuries where players have laxity or looseness in the shoulder. And if it progresses to where they lose control of that motion, there's instability, functional instability, and the shoulder starts slipping out of the joint. Maybe not completely dislocating, but slipping enough that it's out of position. It causes pain. Every time it happens, there's more damage to the soft tissue around it. Each episode is more aggravating than the last. We've certainly seen that in the case of Tatis. And then ultimately there comes a point where the rubber meets the road and you have to provide external stabilization because the situation becomes untenable. And I think I went and watched Keller's entire conversation with the media because I think if you looked at this thing in its entirety, you could tease that out. That this is what they are doing now, that they are hoping that he can get through the remainder of the season without incident, and then hopefully, he might avoid surgery, or if he needed it, it would be in the off season. And look, I understand seasonal calendars. If this were happening in July or August, the approach might be different. But here's a young kid who's under the pressure of a huge contract as well, so there's internal pressure. Of course, he wants to play. The team wants him to play, and to say your season is potentially done when you're barely a week in, nobody really wants to deal with that right now. And if there's even a glimmer of hope that he could play, everyone's all for it. The problem is he's going to have apprehension. He's going to get in those positions. He takes a big swing and a miss again. Well, then he has the potential to sublux that shoulder, and he's certainly going to be thinking about it. You can't not think about it. And we've seen guys change their swing mechanics, make adjustments that hurt their stats, if not the rest of their body. And then there's sort of this decline until they're really not functioning well in their position.
So the baseball executives I spoke to, who, you know, of course, are speaking with their medical experts, what they were getting from the folks they talked to is that one of the issues potentially down the road is arthritis for someone who has this. Can you speak to that generally? Because, of course, you know, I don't have access to his actual medical records.
Right. I think so. Anytime you have trauma to a joint, you run the risk, like we said, of damage to the soft tissues. And in the case of the shoulder, we're talking about things like the labrum, which is a ring of cartilage that adds stability to what is normally a very loose joint. You're talking about the capsule of the shoulder, which is the fibrous tissue that surrounds the joint. But if you completely dislocate, there's often tearing of that capsule. And then externally, beyond that, you know, the muscular support system, I mean, for example, we heard them mention the rotator cuff was fine. That really was not ever the major threat. But when you have repeat acute or violent trauma to the joint, you run the risk of also damaging the bone structure. You can get a fracture with a violent dislocation. You can damage cartilage, which protects the end surface of bone and takes directly to the arthritis risk. If there's cartilage damage and that cartilage damage is repeated with other incidents, then you're disrupting the joint surfaces, and that is the beginning of arthritis, for which we have no cure. I mean, be very clear. So you're talking about a young player who you want to protect his health for the life of his career, and I think that's where some of the worry comes in. We heard Preller say this is, you know, he's at no more risk than, of further damage. Well, maybe not. In the sense that he could have minor subluxation episodes and potentially not stress the tissue beyond what it has. But if he has a major event, again, not just static. Think about him fielding a ball, diving with an outstretched arm. And if when we look at the incidents in the spring that bothered him, head first slide, fielding a ball with, you know, putting his arm in a position to field the ball. These are all things he's going to have to do in the course of the game. I find it hard to believe that he's going to be able to make it through the rest of the season.
So I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question because, again, you know, you're not in a position where you're seeing Tatis Jr.'s medical records. If you were working for a team that had a player in the first week of a 14-year, $340 million contract, and that player suffered this type of injury at this time, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would be your concern about the duration of the contract?
With doing nothing? But I think it's hard to speculate there because ultimately I think they're going to have to do something. The thing that stuck out to me here, and this is where I would be more conservative, is when Cromer said, you know, hey, we hope he's back in 10 days. He's already got full range of motion. Look at what happened. He went through the spring coming back quickly, and every episode got worse. To the point where he has an episode that you are calling the worst one you've ever seen, and he's having the most pain he's ever experienced with it. And you're telling me that a few days of rest and swinging a bat again, and he's going to be back. I mean, even if you try a conservative approach, I think most of us would agree that you're talking about at least a 4 to 6 week recovery period where you're really trying to engage muscular training to help protect you in those circumstances of the big swing and the miss, the fielding, the ground ball. If you don't work on training some of the muscular stabilization, what are you relying on to be any different when he goes back out there? So I think if I were advising, I would be emphasizing, look, we need a longer shutdown now if we're going to try to attempt this. And I don't invalidate the let's give this one more try and see how it does, because the player has the right to speak to his medical situation as well and to be part of that decision making. And if he wants to try, you say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lay out this lengthy detailed rehab. You haven't done that before, so we're going to do that. And then we're going to bring you back gradually. But the minute you start to experience anything, you know, you've got to be honest with us. This is a big communication thing. And if it requires that we take a more drastic step now to protect you for the longevity of your career, then that's what we do.
All right, Stefania, I'm going to have you on to see if I can catch up with you next week to ask you more about Aaron Judge and we get more information about his situation, because obviously with his long history of injuries keeping him out of the lineup, a lot of questions about you know, how effective he's going to be moving forward. Great stuff on Fernando Tatis Jr. We got our fingers crossed for him.
Thank you. I believe me, I do too.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. I mean, Sarah, as we get forward, we move forward today, just want to ask you, in this first week of baseball, we got a week in now, what team has kind of stood out to you, whether it's good or bad?
You know, a team that's caught my eye is the Reds. And I think they're just on the list of teams that I wasn't expecting too much out of this year. And, you know, they haven't played the strongest of opponents over. They played the Cardinals and they played the Pirates. So they played within their division, which we're expecting to be weak. But they're 5-1. They've scored 57 runs. They have a plus 31 run differential. And I just didn't expect that kind of offense out of them at all. And they were kind of a popular dark horse type of pick last year. And I know they made the playoffs, but they made the playoffs like right around 500. And they weren't really that great despite making the postseason. But it seems like maybe that excitement and that, you know, expectation that people had over them, maybe it was just a year too early. I mean, I don't think Tyler Naquin's going to have 7 RBIs like each week, let alone in a game each week. But it's been exciting to see what they've been putting up.
Yeah, when I've been talking about, tweeting about the mush ball in baseball, how it does feel like the ball's not traveling as far, I've gotten back a lot of response from Reds fans saying, oh, yeah? What are you talking about? What do you mean mush ball? Our guys are doing just fine with what they have. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
Number three is 115. So I know I talked about Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton on Tuesday, and I'm talking about Giancarlo Stanton again. And as long as he's healthy and doing what he's doing, he's probably going to come up a lot. So he had a single last night, 115.7 miles an hour off the bat. That was his 108th regular season batted ball of 115 plus miles an hour tracked by Statcast. Nobody else has more than 45. And of course it's teammate Aaron Judge. And Stanton already has four batted balls of 115 plus miles an hour this year. Nobody else has more than one. And I said this on Tuesday, I'm going to say it again, him doing what he's doing. And we know Judge got hurt last night. We'll see exactly what happens, but Giancarlo Stanton doing what he's doing is just, you know, a whole other ball game for the Yankees in terms of expectations for them. I think it's a really good thing. I know they lost last night. It was a kind of silly extra inning game, but overall, when he's hitting 115 mile an hour singles, that's going to be really good for the Yankees.
Number two
is zero. So our late game last night, the only game going on after that Yankee game ended, was Rockies Diamondbacks. And on Tuesday, we had Rockies and Diamondbacks, where Ryan McMahon had three homers and a double, and the Rockies lost the game in extras. Last night, the Rockies won 8-0. And whenever you see a shutout at Coors Field, it's pretty interesting. So I took a look at it, and it was the second time in franchise history that the Diamondbacks were shut out at Coors Field in their 202nd game there. And the other shutout was July 3rd, 2009. The Diamondbacks starter was Max Scherzer. And I just think that's a really fun view of how long it's been. But you don't see a lot of shutouts at Coors Field. It wasn't Antonio Senzatella went 8 innings. It wasn't an individual shutout. But you don't see a lot of teams not even muster a run at Coors.
Number one
is two. So Pablo Sandoval has pretty much, other than the game two days ago against Max Scherzer, has pretty much been the Braves offense in a lot of ways so far this season. And he had a game-tying two-run homer on opening day, and then he had a game-winning homer against the Nationals in game two of the doubleheader yesterday, pinch hit home runs. He became the first Brave to account for all of his team's runs via a pinch hit homer twice in one season. And he's done this, we're just at a week from opening day now. He's already done that. The Braves record for pinch hit homers in a season is 5 by 1945 Butch Niemann. So again, Pablo has accounted for all of the Braves runs via a pinch hit homer twice already this season.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, now that he's embraced a part-time role, he's like a perfect pinch hitter, because even, you know, from his first days in the big leagues through the postseasons we've seen, this is someone who can get bat to ball against even the best pitchers. And that's what makes him so dangerous in these situations, and it informed the Braves' decision to keep him on their roster. Speaking of the Braves, as we've talked about, this is a special anniversary in baseball history. The 47th anniversary of the day that Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record. You obviously weren't old enough to have seen this event, but when you watch a video of that, what jumps out at you?
You know, I think it's just the entire reaction. I mean, I don't know if I remember the first time I saw this video, because I grew up in such a baseball household that I was probably very young the first time I saw it. But I can remember being very young and seeing it, whether it was in the Ken Burns baseball documentary or something replaying on Baseball Tonight, SportsCenter, whatever else it might be. And just the reaction of the crowd, everybody running on the field. I mean, the concept of people running on the field is always funny to me, because that really can't happen in our game anymore. And Craig Sager running out there trying to get that interview. I mean, I just think that, you know, the way that he, everything that he went through during that time, and we certainly can't minimize that. I thought that the in the moment reaction there was really inspiring. And I mean, I'm excited to see what types of tributes we see today. It's so sad that we lost him earlier this year, but I always appreciate a moment to remember such a wonderful moment and such a wonderful man.
You know, it jumps out at me seeing Dusty Baker in the on deck circle. Yes. That's pretty cool for that home run. And the reaction of the Braves relievers, the ball landed in the Braves bullpen and Tom House caught it. And you immediately see the Braves relievers like exiting the bullpen because they wanted to be part of the celebration around home plate. Tom House going down in history for sure. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. First up, we have PK Steinberg. He writes in, Judge and Stanton injuries are like death and taxes and dandelions inevitable. What role do the launch angle and exit velo and analytics in general play in their inability to stay healthy? Did this penchant for a hyper-violent swing affect Tatis too?
Yeah, I think the violent swing potentially could affect Tatis Jr. You hear that from teams, actually, as they evaluate players. Now, sometimes that doesn't work out. I can remember about 15 years ago hearing about the really violent delivery of a young pitcher to the point that teams are like, I'm not touching that guy. That guy's going to break down. That guy's going to have all kinds of physical problems. Well, guess who that was? Max Scherzer. But kind of this unusual head snap. And so teams passed on him, and it turned out okay for the Detroit Tigers and the Washington Nationals, I'd say that.
Indeed. Next up, we have Sanzier. At Sanzier, he writes in, do you think if Odor had to shave off that beard, his batting average will increase, going from an all-power lumberjack look to a clean-shaven baby face could decrease resistance as he moves through the zone?
Sanzier, if you say so, okay? I would say this. I've always wondered, not necessarily about position players, but closers who have that, you know, the sort of intimidating facial hair that they grow. And then we've gone to the Yankees and they look completely denuded. I've wondered if that like ruins their self-image of toughness when they have to do that.
Really affecting their mojo and their flexing in the mirror, right, at home. Last one for today. Ben Teschner at BA Teschner writes in, and you'll have to explain this to me. I don't think we've talked about this before. He asks, which division is the goat rodeo this season?
That was, I'm pretty sure it was the National League West from a couple years ago, where essentially it was, you know, these teams all bunched together and it was hard to make sense of it all. At that time, I think there was some implication that there was some, you know, flaws within the division as well, and you just couldn't sort it out. I don't think there are necessarily as many flaws in the National League East this year, but that is definitely the goat rodeo. Like trying to figure out, you know, who's going to come out of this crazy division where you essentially have five good teams, maybe even a couple of great teams. That'll be a challenge.
All right. We'll keep an eye on it. Thanks for the questions, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Boog, Sarah, Stefania, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.